Good evening, Dharma friends. Guess what I need? A timepiece. Guess what I always forget? Ah, out of that sleeve. Thank you, Kokyo. Comes a timepiece. So tonight, I would like to speak about a dear friend of mine. Okay, and this dear friend, I don't have that. Maybe someone here can help me. This dear friend of mine lived a long time ago. His name was Dongshan. And I'm madly, of course, looking through my carefully prepared notes. Where's that date about? Oh, I think it was the 9th century. Okay, he lived in the 9th century. And he's one of our very, very important ancestors in this lineage of Soto Zen. In fact, his name is the Toe in Soto. Studying about the ancestors and studying their teachings and their awakening experiences is one of the ways that we practice with the Dharma in this tradition of Soto Zen. There's lots of different ways we can practice. And I know many of you in this room have experienced different kinds of practice and enjoy different kinds of practice. We can study the intricacies of the mind through the Yogacara and Nagarjuna and that approach to study. Or we can grapple with the paradoxes of the koans, the teaching stories. Some of us like to practice with simple heart practices like metta, wishing loving kindness on other beings. Some of us really, it's a body practice. It's about breath, about settling into the body. So those are all fine practices, and it's really all just about the same thing, which is about encouraging ourselves to be present right here, right now. This mind, this body, this heart, these people, this life. Zen. So that's actually at the core of the story that I'm going to want to tell you, which is a story about Dongshan. Actually, I'm going to tell you many stories about him. But it's a very kind of complicated and I think Taigen called it mind-blowing story. So I'm going to give you a lot of context before we walk into the teaching of the language of the insentience, because otherwise I think you're going to just get up and leave, except a few hardcore Dongshan fans. And I want you to love Dongshan, because you've got to love this guy. He was the one who, when he was a little boy, and he was down in the marketplace and he heard somebody chanting the Heart Sutra. No eyes, no ears, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind. He said, but I have eyes. I have a nose. I have ears. And the teacher that he said that to kind of went, oh my God, you need to study with another teacher. You're already, beyond what I can teach you. This is Dongshan when he's a little kid. So he sent him off to study with another teacher. Because even then, he was intuiting that there's not just one side. So there's the beautiful Heart Sutra, which is, for very good reasons, kind of negating, saying, we think we understand what reality is about. We have it all figured out, but the Heart Sutra encourages us to let it all go. No, no mind, no body, no heart, no thought. Just let it go. And that is one side. That's the side of emptiness. That's the side of the boundless, formless, absolute. And yet, even as a little boy, and with the beautiful innocence of a child, he was also saying, But there's also the relative side. We do have a body. We do have a mind. Don't tell me we don't have a mind. Of course we have a mind. How else do we get through the day if we don't have a mind? So this, one could say, he wasn't Yeah, grappling with these two sides, this way that we posit reality as a duality. Good, bad, you know, self-other, form emptiness, difference unity, relative absolute. We favor one side, we favor the other side, we argue for the reality of one, we argue for the reality of the other. And this was of interest to Dongshan his entire life. He wrote the beautiful poem, The Jewel Mirror Samadhi, which is a meditation on this expression of non-duality. He concocted the five ranks, which is a beautiful and intricate teaching that looks at each of these different aspects of form and emptiness and form, neither emptiness nor form, both emptiness and form. He was really into that. So this was, he's one of the ancestors that kept that kind of inquiry alive so that today those of us who are drawn to that can benefit from his teaching. And the other thing, kind of contextually, that I was thinking about today, talking about this with a friend yesterday, that, you know, we don't have as much recorded material about these ancestors as they're going to have 500 years from now when they read about us. You know, that the 500 years, they'll have YouTube videos and, you know, MP3s and books, and we're recording ourselves all the time. But back then, you know, it was a little bit harder. So it was all either word of mouth, or some people would write things down and maybe it would get lost or maybe it would get saved. So even with a great ancestor like Dongshan, you know, we kind of just have scraps to go on. And yet what moves me so much is even with these scraps, you get a feeling for what kind of person he was and what he struggled with. And he was not a perfectly realized scholar sitting on the mountaintop, you know, calmly writing his views about Zen. He struggled, Dongshan. He struggled, and the story I'm going to tell is basically him struggling to understand something. He heard a teaching, and it moved him, but he didn't understand it. So he goes to his teacher and says, "I don't get it." And I think this is so important for us to recognize that it's easy because these ancestors lived a long time ago and because we revere them, it's easy, I think, to idealize them, you know, as if they didn't have the same kinds of struggles and the same kind of, you know, issues about being human that we have. So I'm always kind of reading between the lines in these stories and appreciating when this kind of humanity comes through of the ancestors. And he's one of the ones that his stories are very, very accessible and they're very emotional. And that's one of the reasons I love him. So thank you, Dongshan, for your dedicated practice. And let's go a little deeper into this particular story. But like I said, I have to unpack some of the terms before I tell you the story, because it's pretty out there. So there's a term that's pivotal in this story, and it's non-sentient, sometimes also translated as inanimate. Okay? So what does that mean? Well, there's two interpretations that I'm aware of that are in the literature, and one of the interpretations is that this is the other than human realm, the realm of grasses, trees, mountains, rivers, tiles, whisks, all the beings and things of the world that are not human. Animals, yeah, I guess. I'm not sure. I probably, yeah. But they mostly talk about nature, so I'm not going to go there. That's another inquiry, and I'm not going to venture out on the skinny branches of that one, but thank you. Okay. But this using the metaphors of nature to express this, define this non-sentient or inanimate, in my study that I did for this talk, a particular book written by Taigen about Dongshan called Just This Is It, a really good book. But he actually says that this understanding of the non-sentience as being the natural world was a Chinese innovation. It wasn't really in the Indian Buddhist teaching. You know, they didn't talk about this. But when you get into China, there's some really, really strong and really direct teachings about the importance of it. And that here's a quote, for example, from Jizong. He lived in the 6th and 7th century, and they say he was from the Madhyamaka tradition. And he basically said this. He said, if one denies Buddha nature to anything at all, then not only are grasses and trees devoid of Buddha nature, but living beings are also devoid of Buddha nature. So you can't parse it out and say, well, this part of reality, these beings have it and these beings don't. Because he said, if these beings don't have it, neither do we. So this was one of the kinds of views. Also, the Tian Tai school that loved the Lotus Sutra, they found this same teaching in the Lotus Sutra. The very colors and smells of the world constitute the assembly of the lotus. The very colors and smells of the world constitute the assembly of the lotus. They are the immediate, undefiled expression of Buddhahood. So there's others here, too, I could keep quoting. I don't necessarily want to, but I could. But there's a very, very strong message that goes on through the centuries of these Chinese teachers saying these things. And that influenced the people who became our ancestors. For example, good old Sekito Kisen, who wrote the Sando Kai, the merging of difference and unity, this influenced him. And then that teaching influenced Dongshan, and Dongshan influenced Dogen, our beloved ancestor Dogen. He taught this very, 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 very same thing. In one example of that is in the Bendo Wa. You've heard this before, but I'll read it now in this context, because this is the beautiful conversation about Dharma that the ancestors have through the centuries. And this is why Dharma exists, is because the ancestors talk to each other through time. And this is why we know these things, because they did that. We're part of that exact same stream. We're not separate from them. So Dogen, being influenced by these Chinese teachers, being influenced by Sekito Kisen, being influenced by Dongshan, he says, because earth, grass, trees, walls, tiles, and pebbles all engage in Buddha activity, those who receive the benefit of wind and water caused by them are inconceivably helped by the Buddha's guidance, splendid and unthinkable, and awaken intimately to themselves. There it is, that same strand of this teaching. So that's one of the understandings about what this non-sentient means, is that whole understanding and tradition of this aspect of Dharma. But now fasten your seatbelts, because there's another one. And this one... I love it, but... Okay, so this one is... that the insentience, the language of the insentience, is that which cannot be reached by thinking. What Dogen called the awesome manifestation of the single way beyond sound and form. Primordial mind. Emptiness that is beheld by prajna, by wisdom. And Huineng, the sixth ancestor, described it as, there is a subtle consciousness that is unrelated to being and non-being, keenly aware but without attachments. What is it that is keenly aware, but without attachments? What is that? Well, that's also said to be what is meant by the language of the insentients, that which literally cannot be heard by the ear. So, with that in mind, I'm now going to share the story with you. And the first story, first I got to say one more thing. Dogen, again. This is him commenting more on this subtle consciousness, this being keenly aware but without attachments. And this is in his commentary on the story that I'm going to be reading. So he says, hearing Dharma is not limited to ear sense and ear consciousness. You hear Dharma with complete power, complete mind, complete body, and complete way from before your parents were born. So this is the realm that we're going to walk into now with this story. And the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to read the story without explaining anything. And please don't be distressed if you totally don't understand it. Because guess what? Dongshan didn't either. That's one of the whole point of this thing. He heard a story. And I'm going to tell you the story. And he didn't understand it, so he asked his teacher, Guishan, about it. So, and this is long, so here we go. So Dongshan says, I heard that national teacher Huizhong taught that inanimate beings expound the Dharma. Again, this national teacher was one of these 5th, 6th, 7th century Chinese teachers who were teaching this teaching that, if one denies Buddha nature to anything at all, then not only are grasses and trees devoid of it, but we are too. So he said, I heard that this national teacher was teaching that the inanimate beings expound the Dharma. I don't get it. So Guishan said, well, do you remember what he said or not? And Dongshan says, yeah, I remember. So Guishan says, please repeat it. Okay, this thing that you don't understand, tell me the story. So here it is. So this is now Dongshan telling the story that a monk came to the national teacher and asked the question. He said, what is the mind of the ancient Buddha? And the national teacher said, it's a wall tile. But isn't a wall tile inanimate? Yes. And it can expound the Dharma? It expounds it brilliantly without let up. Why can't I hear it? You yourself may not hear it, but that doesn't mean others can't hear it. Who are the people who can hear it? All the holy ones can hear it. Can you hear it or not? Don't you love the student? I mean, do you get it? How persistent is this student? Would you have the guts to do that with your teacher? Just make them tell you, you know? Can you hear it or not? I cannot hear it. If I could hear it, I would be the equal of the saints. And then you could not hear me expound the Dharma. Glad you got the joke. So then the monk says, well, all beings can't understand that sort of speech. The teacher says, I expound Dharma for the sake of beings, not for the sake of saints. Well, after beings hear it, then what? Never satisfied, of course, right? That's me talking. Well, then they're not sentient beings. What scripture teaches about inanimate beings expounding the Dharma? Well, obviously, this is not found in the scriptures, nor is it something that some noble one has said, but haven't you heard the words of the flower garland, Avatamsaka Sutra, that says the chilocosm, which, by the way, is a Buddhist term for 1,000 solar systems, the chilocosm, sentient beings, and the three realms all proclaim it. So there's the story, okay? And Dongshan is saying, I don't get it. So Guishan, now we're back to Dongshan and his teacher. Guishan says, well, I have this teaching, but one seldom encounters a person who understands it. Dongshan, I'm not clear about it. I ask you for instruction about this. Do you understand? I don't understand. Please explain it to me, master. The mouth which my parents gave to the world is utterly unable to explain this to you. Sorry, kid. But here he is. He's persisting. Is there anyone else in your generation whom you respect who could explain it to me? Yeah, there is. Go over there where the stone houses are strung together down there in Yu County, and you'll find a man of the way called Yunyan. If you search the grass, the face that faced the wind, then you'll certainly hold him in esteem. And that was how Dongshan was sent to meet his teacher, the one with whom he would have his awakening that verified him as an ancestor in the Soto lineage. It was Yunyan. It was the teacher that Guishan sent him to that was the person with whom he developed the deep intimacy that led to his awakening. So he goes and says to him, he starts over. Who can hear the non-sentient preach the Dharma? And Yunyan says, the non-sentient can hear the non-sentient preach the Dharma. So now we're going to slow down, and we're going to see if in our humble little Zendo, we can try to at least have a scrap of understanding of what this might mean. So he says, who can hear it? Well, the non-sentient can hear the non-sentient. There is no object. So it's a concurrent, co-arising. It hears itself. This can seem to be so abstract and out there, but I would offer, I don't know if this is an accurate analogy or not. You can tell me what you think when we have some discussion, but I was trying to think, like, what would this be like in my life? Well, if I have any hope at being connected to this subtle consciousness that is keenly aware but without attachments, then somehow to me that has something to do with quieting the mind, because that's the attachment, that's the conversation, that's the clutter. Stop trying to figure it out, and then the world opens up. Then I had this experience the other morning. I was in some emotional distress, and I was at dawn down at the ocean, and I was just looking at the ocean. I was watching the sunrise, and as so often happens for me when I turn to great nature, when I'm in distress, there's a perspective that is offered that's hard to do if I'm just focused on the internal commentary in the mind. But there's something about the non-sentient. There's something about this reality that is beyond my interpretive structure that is real. It's not fictitious. It's real, and it's supportive. And so it's not an object that my ears can hear, but it's there, and we are awakening together. We are intuiting each other, just being present with the waves, with the changing light. So Yunyan says, the non-sentient can hear the non-sentient preach the Dharma. Is there some part of me that can actually hear that when I am being keenly aware but without attachment? When I'm allowing space for this subtle consciousness to be present? So then Dongshan asks the same question that the monk asked the national teacher. Do you hear it? And again, how human is this? He's trying to make it human. It's like, yeah, I hear. Okay, yeah, right, the non-sentient can hear the non-sentient. But do you hear it? You know, get real, teacher. And don't forget, this is the kid who said, but I have eyes, I have ears, I have a nose, I have a mouth. So he's still being Dongshan here. And Yunyan says, much like the national teacher said in the story, well, if I could hear it, you wouldn't be able to hear me preach the Dharma. You know, you are still needing me to explain it to you. So you can't hear it because you're still expecting me to explain it to you. You're trying to listen with your ears. That's not how the insentient is heard. It's not heard with your ears. It's not heard with your mind that wants to understand everything and have me tell you the answer. That's not where it exists. I love it. Why couldn't I hear you? You know, his teacher is giving him, you know, gift after gift, and he's not seeing it. He's still trying to, you know, figure it out and have the teacher, you know, I don't know. Anyhow, I feel so much affection for him here. So, Union, if I could hear it, you would not be able to hear me preach the Dharma. Why couldn't I hear you? Well, can you hear me or not? I can't hear you. When I expound the Dharma, Union said, you can't hear me. So how could you hear it when the inanimate things proclaim it? How can you even hear it? You're not open. you're in this narrow little band of interaction with me, trying to figure things out. How do you expect that you're going to hear that which is beyond form and emptiness? That which is beyond this duality of trying to figure things out. It's that which cannot be reached by thinking, and you're trying to figure it out by thinking. And yet there's also, I think, a kind of a kindness in the teacher perspective here, like when the national teacher said to the monk, well, if I could hear it, I would be the equal of the saints, and then you wouldn't be able to hear me. I expound Dharma for the sake of beings, not for the sake of saints. I hear that as a really, really kind thing that the teacher is saying. He's meeting the student, he's meeting the monk where he or she, we don't know, is. Skillful means. So then, just like the other student did, Duongshan asked, well, are there any scriptures that teach about this? And Yunyan finds another one and says, haven't you heard that in the Amitabha Sutra, it says, the lakes and rivers, the birds, the forests, they all chant Buddha, they all chant Dharma? So then, Duongshan experiences a great insight, and he writes a verse. How incredible. How incredible. Inanimate things proclaiming Dharma is inconceivable. It can't be known if the ears try to hear it, but when the eyes hear it, then it may be known. So this was his first kind of big understanding. There was another one yet to come, which could be the subject of another talk, and I'm not going to go there. It's the one when he took leave of his teacher. They said goodbye, and he crossed the river. And some of you know that story. That was kind of his big one. But this is an important one. This is a real breakthrough for him. How incredible inanimate things proclaiming Dharma is. It's inconceivable. It can't be conceived. It's beyond conception. It doesn't exist in the realm of concepts. It is inconceivable. It can't be known if the ears try to hear it. But when the eyes hear it, then it may be known. What an interesting statement that is. Maybe you could share what you think that might mean in a minute when I stop talking. But I wanted to say one other thing about that, because I thought it was interesting. In Tigan's book, he makes reference to this term, synesthesia. I know we talked about that once. And he actually offers that is a kind of a more contemporary scientific term for what Duongshan was speaking about when he said, when the eyes hear it, then it may be known. So synesthesia is the mingling of senses so that one sense mode occurs from stimulus from another. That's called synesthesia. So Tigan here says, Dongshan uses this to present experiential evidence of an awareness of suchness beyond the conventional limitations of sensation and the familiar routines of human conceptualization. So not narrowly defining presence as a particular sense. Oh, it's my eyes. Oh, it's my ears. Oh, I'm tasting it. But actually, and also not verbal understanding, not conceiving, not trying to conceive, but actually an awareness of phenomena from a more primal wholeness. The eyes and the ears and the nose and the tongue and the mouth interacting so that he has this experience of when the eyes hear it. So maybe that would be a good place to stop and just explore a little bit of this together, because I think that's a pretty provocative and interesting term, and I'd be interested to hear what your reaction is or how you hear that or any of the other things that I've been offering from this story. Yeah, Edie.
Well, I'm thinking of this flower, this plant I have near my front door that is sunlight coming through the window, and right now it's going crazy with 7 different blooms all happening at the same time. And every day I turn it a little bit, and the flowers turn a little bit towards the sun. To me, that's hearing and seeing at the same time. And you could analyze it and say it's the chemicals, it's photosynthesis, or, you know, some other thing, but it's the interaction of the plant and the sun, and you can see it,
yeah,
and hear it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's a beautiful example. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah, are you?
Mine is like super blown because I was thinking about this concept, and I was thinking of the same word, synesthetic. And maybe I read this before, and I suddenly or just forgot it or something. But I was questioning that word actually that came to mind, and I felt that it might not actually be so accurate. And the reason is that we say something like you were saying, right? You hear with your eyes, or you taste with your ears, or you see music. Might be all examples of synesthesia. And yet, it seems to me that, like in the Heart Sutra, no eyes, no ears, no nose, no tongue. Like we're not. It's something. It's like synesthesia in the sense that it's like it's like we're experiencing this nature, but it's like through all these senses, and yet it's beyond the senses in a way. So when you were saying he hears with his eyes, it seems to me that he didn't really mean hearing with the physical eyes. It means that something more subtle than that, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And yet there's also this other phrase that comes to mind, though it is not fabricated, it is not without speech, which is really interesting because that kind of seems to me, either it means something similar to what I was thinking, or it's kind of turns this on its head. It's like actually this insentient phenomena can be expressed through these conventional means. Maybe it could mean that, I'm not so sure. But that's definitely what's coming to mind to me as you're speaking a lot. There's mm-hmm. other kind of perspective.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah,
yeah, and I mean, I would, there it can't be that there's a definitive answer to this. And they, you know, here they are for centuries kind of passing this along and help me understand. And he's giving it to us now. And what is this for you? How does this support your liberation? You know, because that's ultimately what this is about, is your liberation, my liberation, all beings. So how might this turning and tumbling and mind-blowing and not this, not that, actually be a supportive offering from Ancestor Dongshan? Yeah.
When these electrical things I focus on, as I try to understand various parts of very simple Buddhist teachings like no preferences. And in line with what you're talking about, I experienced yesterday going with my husband up to the dump to take some green waste and some recycling. And spending some time up there is always not the most pleasant of sensory experiences. And so the windows were down, it was hot. And on the way out, I said, oh, let's put the windows up and get the smell out of the car. You know, we put the windows up, we started to leave the dump. And then I said, let's put the windows down now so that we can get rid of that dump smell and get the nice, sweet, cool ocean breezes in the car. At which point, it filled with the smell of skunk.
Yeah, there you go.
Just what you're saying, inanimate, you know, objects are teaching.
Yeah.
It was like this Dharma gate flung open, and I just started to laugh. And I said, talk about no preferences.
Yeah, that's great.
It
yeah, I love it.
And what part was I contributing to
yeah.
what I considered a stench, you know?
Yeah.
So it all kind of tumbled into this wonderful teaching.
Thank you for bringing up this topic, and I'm glad that we're not storming with pitchforks.
Yet.
What's it like to be either a sentient being or an insentient being speaking this Dharma about sentient and insentient, and now you're in the position of the teacher, and what do you think you understand, and are you a
well-timer? Yeah. It's humbling. It's humbling, you know. And part of me, you know, when I was thinking a while ago, what do we want to do this talk about? I had this kind of gut feeling. I want to tackle something, you know, because I often will, you know, look into my life for, I have another talk that I could have given tonight without notes about something that happened the other day that is a great story, but I felt like it would have been too easy. I'll probably do it because it's really good, but there was something about this one. I wanted to have to grapple with something, but I wanted it to be something I care about, and I really care about this teaching. I really do. I've chewed on it before. I'm going to probably include it in the summer little intensive that I do. So I really care about it, and I really care about Dongchan. So I thought, if all I can do is just inspire somebody to go and read and get to know Dongchan, then from my bully pulpit, then that's good. Now, if I might also inspire somebody to go and check out some of these teachings and poke around in this stuff, then I would feel good about that too, because it's pretty, I just think it's so interesting. And there's so many interconnections of these different teachers trying to explain and talk about this, you know. And then Dogen has a whole fascicle about it. So I'm not sure I'm answering your question, but I'm sharing my experience with you. That's what it feels like to be me here now doing this.
Do you find it important and interesting because you feel yourself to be an insentient being?
No, I feel pretty sentient. I feel pretty sentient. Not that I don't have, not that I'm not awestruck when I get a glimmer of my understanding of the insentient. I kind of live for that. But I'm all too willing to just let the crap fill my mind and close my ears and close my eyes. So there's just, you know, it seems so far away. And I apologize for that. Well, like the teacher said, I teach for, how did he put it? I don't teach for saints. I You know, I thank you. You know, I'm glad that there's teachers who aren't just preaching to the saints, because then I would never receive any Dharma. You know, what did he say? I expound Dharma for the sake of beings, not for the sake of saints. Yeah, so that kind of spirit there. Kokyo.
Grappling with Zen stories is a lot of fun. I'm with you on that. And I wonder, when you said earlier, well, there's no definitive interpretation here. We could all just interpret however we want. But that would be a non-definitive interpretation of...
Indeed.
Some might say, oh no, there is. Time understood something particular, and that's why the story got recorded. Uh-huh. And with all these end stories, we can play with them, but I wonder, for myself, is there like a particular definitive understanding?
Well, I think he's offering that when he says, how incredible. Inanimate things proclaiming Dharma is inconceivable. It can't be known if the ears try to hear it, but when the eyes hear it, then it may be known. That sounds pretty definitive.
Inconceivable is definitive.
Yeah. It's inconceivable, and don't try to figure it out with your ears. However, when the eyes hear it, then it may be known. I mean, he's putting his little stake
not
in the ground.
Eyes born from mother and father.
No, not the eyes born from mother and father. The Dharma eye. The prajna eye. Yeah.
It just seems to me that it's pointing to this this mind, this little squirrel mind, completely forgets all the time this kind of absolute miracle of just stuff. And we're just part of the stuff, and it creates this very kind of world, you know. I guess we need that to sort of make our way around and not get eaten by tigers and things like that. But it's just, you know, I kind of going back to discussions of God. It's like, what is all this stuff? Where did it come from? Mm-hmm. You know, where did I, you know? It's about pointing to that just profound mystery and just like hitting us on the head, wake up. It's not this little squirrel mind, you know. It seems like we've got this little
wake up
going on, but this is this incredible whatever it is.
Yeah, I think the world is always saying, "Wake up, wake up." Wake up! Can you hear it? Something hurt it. Yeah. And as Dogen says, we are profoundly helped by this. You know, he tells us that it's kind of almost time to close, so let me where is that? 146. It's got a post-it in it. Grass, trees, and lands, which are embraced by this teaching, together radiate a great light and endlessly expound the inconceivable, profound Dharma. Grass, trees, and walls bring forth the teaching for all beings, common people as well as sages. And they, in accord, extend this Dharma for the sake of grass, trees, and walls. Thus, the realm of self-awakening and awakening others invariably holds the mark of realization with nothing lacking, and realization itself is manifested without ceasing for a moment. Is there another thing that somebody wants to say before I offer a closing? Yeah.
Sometimes it helps me, Kathy, to kind of remember that we are literally, every atom in our body, stardust left over from the Big Bang.
Mm-hmm.
And that somewhere in that stardust is the wish to manifest in so many different ways and to be able to, one of the forms is us to be able to reflect back on it and realize that's who we and who and how we are.
Yeah. Yeah, beautiful. Beautifully said. Yeah. We are a part of evolution. We are part of the world.
We are.
And everything we do and say is creating it.
Yes.
Well, that was Dongshan's final realization. I am not it. It is me. That's another talk. Okay, not going to go there. But I did want to just say something interesting in closing that Les Hickson, who was a friend of Catherine's and I think a kind of maverick teacher. I don't remember exactly about the story about him, but I know that, people said that he was a little bit out there. But he, why did people?
He sort of became a priest and he became a Sufi and he became a Muslim.
Uh-huh. Well, that sounds pretty cool.
And then he sat down with Maizumi Roshi and went through all the ancestors.
Oh. Okay. Well, because I love his book of the ancestor stories. I mean, we have the traditional translations. Cook has one, but Hickson has one that's called
Living Buddha
Zen. And he takes each of the ancestor stories, and he does this very poetic interpretation of those stories. And he offered this term that I really love with relationship to this term, subtle consciousness. He called it that it is the emptiness that is beheld by prajna. This is where the eye thing comes into your question. He called it the enlightened eye of wisdom, the organ of intuitive knowledge, And he, actually, Kazan said, because Dongshan understood the true nature of the non-sentient, he generated the Soto tradition. Both Kazan and Hickson say that it was this realization that Dongshan had, which is why the branch that is our branch started. Because before Dongshan, it was not a separate branch. When you look at the big family tree of Zen, you can see there's all these branches and there's all these junctures. And these junctures are just different teachers who had different teachings that resonated with different people. And if enough people resonated with somebody's teaching and transmitted to other people, then that becomes a branch. And if that didn't happen, the branch ends. So Dongshan was the beginning of the branch that leads to us. And both of them are saying it was this very understanding that is one of the distinguishing features of this kind of Zen. So this I just thought that's kind of an interesting way to think about the impact that here's these ideas we're talking and thinking about them. But when he thought it and when he wrote this, he didn't know he was going to be the branch that started a new branch of Zen that would continue into this age that he probably would be like, whoa, about. But there it was. See, you never know. So hang in there, ask your questions, challenge your teacher, and when you find that something opens you up and you do feel liberated and you do feel awakened, take time to enjoy the pleasure of that. And allow yourself to say something like, how incredible. How incredible. I got it. for now. So thank you very much for helping me study this, and there we go. Being silent,
I vow to save them. Delusions are exhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma days are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable.